Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
That's right. Welcome to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. You know the call letters already. You know what dial you tuned into the show, because if you didn't know, you wouldn't be listening to us right now, 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Claude Jennings, in with Kevin Stanfield. So this is show number two, but we're going to cover week number two and week number three. You can follow us on Twitter at FFRep. I just tweeted the show. So I'm doing the thing too.
Right.
Claude
okay,
J Radio.
Good.
You can follow me on Twitter as well. And Kevin, we're getting lots of good feedback, man. People love the show. And, you know, who can blame them, right? I mean, this is a pretty good show.
Well, you got to admit, man, guys who are able to do what we do with what we have to work with, man, it's a pretty amazing thing, because they're not giving us a lot to work with.
Right.
I mean, it's like the Godfather. You think you're out, but then they pull you back in, man. You know, and it's just so confusing. But we're here. We're here to, you know, talk people down off the ledge. You know,
right.
Let them know.
Well, that's what's so interesting and what's going to make this show interesting, because so week one, there was some ledge talking we had to do.
Yeah.
Then week two, things seem to be going okay. Like, okay, maybe this team has found what they kind of found themselves, kind of got an identity. The running game was working really well. They beat the Rams 24-10, but we didn't do a show that week because they had the Thursday night game. So we just combined the Thursday night against the Giants with the Rams show. And then they go out and they lose to the Giants 32-21. And so the things we thought we knew, we're not sure if we knew it anymore. And the questions we thought were answered, they may not be answered.
Well, you know, the thing about the Rams game is we know that the Rams always played them tough, very physical outfit. And there were some things that they did that we had been begging for them to do, pleading and praying for them to run the ball. You know, they showcased Matt Jones, who came and busted 100 yards and you know, took the air out of the ball. They tried to slip back into that old pass, even if I don't need to, offense.
Right.
But then they decided that the running game was being fruitful and they were going to stick with it. So they answered a lot of my prayers.
No, exactly. And what's interesting, not only in the Rams game, but we saw this against the Dolphins, where you saw two defenses that had great front lines. And the offensive line held up well against both teams. So against the Dolphins, they held up well. And against the Rams, they were able to, like I said, to run the ball. And Kirk Cousins was not on his back most of the game. And so the offensive line held pretty good. And then you look at the defense playing much improved those first 2 weeks of the season.
Well, Claude, I didn't want to tell you about this, but there's a special reason that it occurred like this. Uh-oh. You know, this past week was a very special week in D.C. And so let me let you and the listeners hear this very special interview I was fortunate enough to be a part of.
It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Very special time in the D.C. area. Not because Burgundy and Gold won a football game. I'm not talking about that. But there's a very, very special visitor to the D.C. area who may or may not have had something to do with this victory. And we all know him. We all love him. I'd like to introduce to you on the Federal Football Report none other than Pope Francis. Your Holiness, it's really an honor having you here. Thank you for joining us here on the Federal Football Report.
Cardinal Le amato, eius in congregationis prefecto, acceptus omnia que opus sunt.
Well, thank you very, very much, sir. Claude and I really appreciate the fact that you listen. Now, we all know your love, your kindness, your mission in life to help the poor and downtrodden. But a lot of people don't realize how big a professional football fan you are.
Nostrum tempus mediuntis, tamquam vitae Christiane et sanctitatis exemplaria, universa ecclesiae esse proponendos.
He says that injury to Tony Romo really, really messed up his fantasy football team.
Cun autem de re maximi momenti agatur.
Yeah, I'm feeling you. So tell me your thoughts about the game yesterday.
Ante quam consilium certum et definitivum capiatur et statuantur dies quibus idem beati.
You know, Claude and I have been telling them that for weeks, that they should be running the ball more.
In sanctorum alum ad scribantur.
Your Eminence, was there a particular performance that stood out to you in the game yesterday?
Ut beati Ioannes Vicesimus Tertius et Ioannes Paulus Secundus in Sanctorum numero censeantur.
Well, with all due respect, Your Eminence, I don't know if you can say that Jordan Reed remaining uninjured for two straight games will qualify as being a miracle.
Si quis vestrum opportunum existimit.
That's right. He said, who's the Pope here, me or you? And in your most holy opinion, what was the coolest thing about the experience yesterday?
Aliquid adere fidender manifestare velit quisent.
I know that's right. He said you've never lived until you've been at a tailgate party at the Pope Mobile.
Et Ioannis Paulus Secundus in Sanctorum numero censeantur.
Well, thank you so much for spending this time with us, Your Eminence, here on the Federal Football Report. And we throw it back to you guys in the studio.
Yeah, man, sometimes you just need a little divine intervention.
Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, if there weren't reason to love the show before, I mean, the Pope listens to the show and came on.
That's right. Now, when he heard that some players had, like, certain alliances to certain teams with stars in their helmet, he was a little hesitant. But I talked him down. But he's a really cool guy. You know, we changed numbers and stuff. We were talking about maybe, you know, getting together for, you know, Thanksgiving, watch a couple of games, right? You know?
Yeah, that'd be good to do. Yeah, Kevin. Really. So like you and the Pope said, the Redskins got back to running the ball against the Rams. You know, Matt Jones going for 123 yards, two touchdowns. And so you look at the game against the Rams and you're like, wait a minute. Here's a Rams team that beat Seattle the week before. You know their defense is pretty good, and the Redskins seemingly had no problems moving the ball up and down the field and scoring on this team. And then they go to New York against the Giants, and you figure, okay, the Giants. Now, who, by the way, look, just because the Giants were 0-2 does not mean you're facing a team that's, you know, sisters of the poor. I mean, they basically should have beaten Dallas if it wasn't for that last drive and that last second touchdown, Tony Romo to Jason Witten. And then they should have beaten Atlanta. Both of those games, they had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter. And so it's not as if the Giants were just blown out of their first two losses. Yeah, they were 0-2, but they were competitive in both of those games. And so you have to expect a competitive game. But I wouldn't have expected, because, the score was 32-21, but a couple, with that one late touchdown, I guess. At one point, I believe it was 23-6 or something like that, 25-6. I mean, wasn't expecting to see that kind of an effort from the Redskins against the Giants.
Yeah, and that's the part that's very disturbing to me, the lack of effort. The Giants came out with a great game plan, a solid game plan. They evidently looked at the film, especially at the film of the Burgundy and Gold's defense, and said, we're just going to run short hitches, short three-step drop timing patterns. They're not going to get the pass rush. It has improved. You got to give them credit for that. It has improved. But Tom Coughlin had a perfect game plan. We're going to counter that. We don't have to worry about where the rush is coming from. We're not going to wait for the rush to get there. Right. We're going to send a few guys out in the pattern. They're obviously terrified of Odell Beckham Jr., so they're playing 10 yards off him. We're going to run 5-yard hitches, 5 yards out, three steps, let go of the ball. And they couldn't stop it.
Right.
It never dawned on them to just come up and bump the guy. Maybe the guy's a little bit tentative, and the cornerback isn't a position that you can play with a tentative nature. You have to be aggressive. Mm-hmm. You have to have a short memory. And I just think that, realistically speaking, perhaps we aren't there yet personnel-wise, but perhaps it's going to take a little while to gather enough players with that hurt somebody mentality. I don't mean play dirty, but I mean, you know, defense.
Just something aggressive. You know what I mean? They call it have a little dog in you. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, we got a little poodle in us right now, man. They're just happy to wear the uniform, but you can't be happy just being there.
Right. And talking about, not being happy just being there, wanting to get in, wanting to play, wanting to make your mark, it seems as if, Alfred Morris, I'm not saying it's getting phased out, but definitely getting less carries in favor of Matt Jones. And I'm not sure whether that's because it's a contract thing going on and whether or not they're thinking about bringing him, keeping him around or what. But I mean, did you notice the lack of carries for Alfred Morris in favor of Matt Jones? Do you think that's more of a scheme thing and Jones is just hot right now? Or?
No, I'm disturbed by that. I'm greatly disturbed. If there was an open competition in training camp like they claimed that there was, if Jones beat him out, it's his job. Just say it. It's his job. But Jones was hot, had a couple of good runs in the prior game. And all of a sudden, Morris is on the bench and just standing there. Well, he has, to me, he hasn't done anything to lose his job.
Right.
It's almost as if he's being punished, or as the verb that I've created now, he's being RG3'd, man.
You know? Well, you brought the quarterback up. Let's talk about the quarterback. And so after week two, of course, with the win, everything seems great. And so it looks like, okay, wow, the Redskins win. They're running the ball. Kirk Cousins didn't turn the ball. Defense looks good against the Rams, come up against the Giants, and Kurt has a bad game. It's Washington. There's nothing we love more than quarterback controversies. And so now all of a sudden, it's like, well, there's one or two camps. It's like, look, either give Kirk the whole season to prove whether he is or he's not the guy, or there's a camp that every time he does something wrong, they're going to compare him to RG3. And we talked about this. That's going to happen as long as RG3 is on the team. With every interception or every loss that happens with Kirk Cousins as quarterback, there's always going to be a question as to should he be the guy in the game or should RG3 be the guy in the game.
If you notice the coverage, they were very mindful of not to repeat the same thing they did opening day, because every camera shot was with RG3 on the sideline. They show Cousins, they show RG3. And the Rams game didn't do it as much. And this game, they didn't do it at all till the second half.
Right.
Till the second half, And that's very unfair to RG3. Now, I heard someone say the past week, Kirk Cousins is who you saw Thursday night. Mm-hmm. That is Kirk Cousins. Someone tweeted during the game, Kirk Cousins now has as many interceptions as Jamarcus Russell on 166 fewer passing attempts. Now,
is he turning into Jamarcus Russell? Or is he Jamarcus Russell?
Well, how did they pull out the Jamarcus Russell comparison, right? I guess someone like took the time to look this up, but if you expected Fran Tarkington or expected Bart Starr or somebody to come out when Cousins came out of the field. No, that's not who he is. He's a serviceable NFL quarterback who was third-string quarterback last year, who is all of a sudden the starter this year. Now, whatever transformation they thought they saw in him from last year to this year that we aren't privy to, well that's fine. That's fine.
Right. But, I think the issue, too, is that, we're in this phase in the league now where, of course, it's a passing league, but it's been this way for a while, where quarterbacks are now expected to come right out of college and play. And while that's fine, if you have one kid that you just drafted and you have a veteran on the team who's going to kind of help shape him and mold him, or if this kid can't play, you've got a guy you can replace him with who's a serviceable backup because he's been a veteran in the league for years. The Skins were in a position where they drafted two young quarterbacks. Neither have had the time to be mentored or developed, and quite possibly they both needed that. And so now you're in a situation where the only option you have are two guys who need to get experience. I mean, like the same people who don't want RG3 in the game and say, well, he needs to develop and needs to mature, can't make excuses for Kirk Cousins because he needs the same thing. He needs time to mature and time to develop. And so, you're caught in a situation where it seems like the only guy with any kind of experience for the most part is Colt McCoy, and they're not going to him.
The thing is, they have to decide what you want to do. What do you want to be? You want to be a competitive team, somebody who's vying for a division title, a conference championship, the Super Bowl? Is that what you want to be? Or are you in the dreaded rebuilding phase? Just, decide. Because if you're rebuilding, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you're not just developing the quarterback. You're developing your scheme. You're putting your flavor on it. You're developing your defense. You're developing your depth, your personnel, and you're developing your special teams, which we have to hit on later.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think you got a shot, you would put the person in who you think gave you the best chance of winning. Now, if Cousins and RG3 are equal in terms of their experience, I personally would lean toward the guy who, A, has done it before, and B, has a little bit more athleticism, who can make a play where there is no play. Don't force anything. Make a play with his legs if he has to, or something. Just that arrogance, that athletic arrogance that maybe is holding RG3 back in some people's eyes, is just what you need to be a winner. Like, let me refer back to my favorite show, Star Trek. Now, a lot of you are too young to remember, but there was an episode where the transporter malfunctioned, and they beamed Captain Kirk up, but they didn't really realize it. It split Captain Kirk in two. You had the evil Captain Kirk, the evil womanizing, drinking, arrogant Captain Kirk, and you had the smart, sophisticated, smooth, calm, low down, low key Captain Kirk.
Uh-huh.
And what they found out was, each one of them had their pluses and their minuses.
Right.
You
right.
needed both of them, right? You needed both of them, right? So that's what, you know, don't look at what people think about RG3 and look at it as arrogance. That might be just that edge that we're needing right now that we don't have in Kirk Cousins.
Right, right, right. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com is the website. When we come back, I want to throw a conspiracy theory out there.
Love it. I love it.
It's regarding Kirk Cousins, Coach Gruden, and we'll talk about it next. Stay close.
Experience the difference of Federal News Radio. Every weekday afternoon, get the most up-to-date and late-breaking federal news and headlines, plus the best interviews of the day. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin, afternoons 3 to 5, and In-Depth with Francis Rose, 5 to 7. Never miss the news you need from the journalists you trust. Experience the difference. Afternoons on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
I thought the corner made a great play. He jumped the route, and it's a bang-bang play. And, you know, I believe there are some throws in this league that if you don't let that one go, you're never going to let a ball go. And you're never going to, you know, be able to complete some of those tight window throws that you got to make in this league to be able to move the football.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. That was quarterback Kirk Cousins talking about one of the interceptions that he threw. Said, hey, look, if you're going to be a quarterback in this league, you're going to have short-term memory and forget some of those passes. And he says, if you're not going to let that one go, you know, you're not going to make it in this league, because some of those passes, Kevin, you just got to get it out. You just got to throw it and see what happens. Those tight window passes.
Well, that would explain his touchdown to interception ratio, because of his philosophy, it doesn't matter if you complete the pass as long as you throw it.
You just got to get it out of there, you know, and then forget about it.
Yeah, if it's yeah.
Well, look, here's the thing, because he does play aggressively. I'm not letting go of the fact that I believe that RG3 is Snyder's guy. You know, there's a reason why he's still on the team. You know, after all the weirdness from the preseason and all the treatment and, you know, and from not just this past preseason, but previous seasons as well, he's still on the team. There's a reason why. It's clear he's Snyder's guy. But it's clear that Gruden does not want him to be his quarterback and probably doesn't want him on the team. Snyder knows he has this PR issue with fans, right?
Uh-huh.
Here's where the conspiracy theory comes in. That I think Snyder's going to give Gruden what he wants for a year.
Really?
I think he's going to say, you know what, Gruden, you want Kurt? Have him. But if this does not work, you're both out of here. That's why RG3 is still on the team, because it's very well that he may not play a snap this season.
I can live with that.
Cousins is gone. Gruden's gone. RG3 plays next year.
Well, you know what? That's an interesting theory, because if I was Snyder, if I were the owner of this team, I'd just go back and I'd look at my records and look at the books and say, you know, I made an awful lot of money selling them number 10 jerseys. Wow. Let me look at the records and look at the past 2 years. How much have I made selling those Kirk Cousins jerseys? How much money have I made selling Gruden jerseys?
But you know what was interesting, though, is that when you look at at public opinion, you know, at least with the fans, if that's how you want to run your team, and it seems like that's what Mr. Snyder does, check this out. You know, it's almost as if Coach Gruden now, and because we were wondering even last year, how long would his leash be before public opinion started to turn on Coach Gruden? It was starting last year, but it's definitely turned this year to where, you know, you're looking at some of these games, and you made the point before we even started the show. It was clear that Coughlin outcoached him, and
very
he's getting
so.
Outcoached all the time. He got outcoached all the time last year, and public opinion is starting to turn on Coach Gruden, where people are starting to doubt whether this guy even knows what he's doing.
Well, my opinion of him, I try to be open-minded about it, but you have to show me something. It had to be from the beginning. He was living off of reputation. There was nothing concrete. Cincinnati has had
he's helped develop Andy Dalton.
Yeah, into a slightly above average quarterback who's never won in the playoffs, mm-hmm, right? You know, mm-hmm. You get to a certain extent. But and the innovations on offense have been little if none. I mean, there's nothing you can look at any type of offense, any type of series, the makeup of a team and say, oh, yeah, that's the Gruden effect right there. You know, mm-hmm. You just don't see it. I don't see it. And we talk often about RG3's ego And maybe he should just be quiet and humble himself and just, you know, shut up and play. Well, maybe Gruden ought to just shut up and coach sometimes because he's not there yet either. And if you say, if he's going to be married to Kurt, you know, if he's going to be married, it's going to be to death do you part, right?
Because
right now he's not in a position, you know, barring injury, he's not in a position to bring RG3 back and everybody look good.
Right, you're right.
He's pretty much, you know, the handwriting is on the wall. This is the way it's got to be, you know, till trade do us part.
Right, no, you're absolutely right. So let's switch and talk about your favorite topic when it comes to this team, the special teams.
Okay.
started the game off pretty bad with the block punt. And here's what's very interesting. So they set up for the punt and it almost gets blocked, but they call running into the kicker, but there was another penalty on the Redskins, so it offsets. And then the same running back for the Giants, Jennings, does the same exact thing and this time blocks the punt.
Well,
you would assume some kind of adjustment would have been made. And this has been a problem because there were a couple of punts in a game or two back that almost got blocked as well.
Well, the disturbing thing here is, number one, like you said, it happened. It almost happened. And they didn't make any adjustments. Number two, the fact that a running back was aggressive enough to run through a linebacker to get to the punter.
Yeah.
A linebacker whose job, above all else in that particular space and time, is to keep somebody from getting to the punter. That's the only job he has.
One
he doesn't
job.
Have to read defenses.
Nothing else.
He doesn't have to call audibles.
Block the guy
block
in front
this
of you.
Guy right. who's coming toward the punter. And he can't do that. Mm-hmm. Why is he still on the team right now? Why is he still? Maybe he's left. He should be on the right side of the line or something. Why is he? You know, when you're there on the field, when you're coaching, when you're playing, when you're part of it right there, when you're part of the 26 mm-hmm. members on the coaching staff, maybe a little bit too close to it.
Right.
Maybe
right.
you can't really see the forest for the trees, right? But we got the luxury of being back in the audience, nice, you know, widescreen TV.
Right.
We can see this running back running over this linebacker. And we look at it, we say, hey, this is wrong.
Right. This should not be happening. Like I said, in week one after the first show, I'm going to do something different with this show this year. We're not going to be about the numbers. We're not going to be about the stats, right? We're going to go with the feel of the game. So what I want to know, Kevin, and anyone can tweet us at FFRep or at Claude J Radio, how do you feel 3 weeks in? Because there's always that tendency to overreact. That's one of the bad things about losing to the Giants that bad on Thursdays, because then you have 10 days to kind of think about the loss, as opposed to if it was the win against the Saints, you'd have the St. Louis, you'd have 10 days to think about a win. And so after 3 weeks, three games, you have a close loss where really should have beat Miami, but couldn't close out that game. A close loss to Miami. Come out, look great against St. Louis, and then a bad loss against the Giants. Where does this team fit into your whole scope when it comes to the feel of the first three games?
I think they are amazingly vanilla. I think that there's no spice to this team, no flair. I thought what I saw against the Rams was the beginning of a personality developing. Mm-hmm. It was going to be pound.
Man,
you know, we're going to give you a heavy dose of Alfred Morris, then a heavy dose of Matt Jones, and we're going to throw a little Chris Thompson in once we've beaten on you a little bit. But then last week came, and, you know, they're still throwing on first down. So I feel amazingly bland. You know, have you been to a restaurant and you tried your dish and the first thing you do is reach for the salt and pepper, the hot sauce, whatever. That's what I'm feeling with this team right now. What about you?
Well, you know, so I feel it's almost like I felt in the first week where despite being 1-2 and the bad loss to the Giants, I feel as if you have to feel like the team is better. Now, I think it depends on what your perspective is for what a successful season would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the team is better. And despite the loss against Miami, remember I said it's weird, I feel good about the loss, even though you don't want to take a loss, but I felt like the effort was, I felt the team played well. And so I feel good about what I see, even though the loss against the Giants could make me kind of skew that. Because again, I'm coming from the perspective that I think the Giants are better than the 0-2 record. Mm. I mean, they should have beaten the Cowboys. They should have beaten Atlanta. That could be a 3-0 team right now. And it was at home. It was a Giants game at home on primetime, big stage for the Giants, and they needed the win. And so I don't think that the loss is as bad as it looked. And so with that being said, I think the team is better. I think that there's somewhere in between what we saw against St. Louis, and that is maybe not as good as the St. Louis game, but not as bad as the Giants game. Maybe right where the Miami game is, and I think that that's okay because I see the improvements. You see, even in the bad game against the Giants, you see the improvement on the offensive line, and that was a huge question for the team. And so you see that improvement. You see a commitment to the running game, and you see a running game that, like you said, can be ground and pound if they ever just decide to commit to the run. And so you see, okay, that's good. There you see an improvement on the defensive line, I feel, and even though the game against the Giants got out of hand maybe in the second half, the defense didn't play that bad in the first half. I mean, you when you're giving the ball up, the first 9 points in the first quarter, one was a safety. That's not the defense's fault. And other one, Kirk Cousins threw an interception in his own territory. That's not the defense's fault. So I think you see improvement in what I feel is at least three of the big question areas coming into the season. And so you see that in a couple of in a good win against the Rams, a close loss against Miami, and then, you know, a game against the Giants that I can understand why they would lose that way. I feel pretty good about
it. Well, let's break it down for a second. Let's start with the offense. Like you said, the excellent choice, drafting a big guy, a tackle, and Scherf, moving them to the outside, because that's where a lot of the problems were coming from last year, right up the middle, right in the quarterback's face. Mm-hmm. Quarterback didn't have time, so it doesn't matter who he is. It was Gandhi back then. Did not have time. So I like that. Some games after, give them 6 games under Callahan, with teaching these guys the fundamentals of football, teaching them to be aggressive, calling some plays that will allow them to attack more than always defend, so they can go forward and inflict punishment. I don't like Alfred Morris in that stretch running attack. He's got to hit the holes and inflict some punishment in it. Same with Mac Jones, right? He seems like a guy who would enjoy delivering the blow. You got to give these guys more of an opportunity. You know, for every 2 times they gained 3 yards, there was a 4-yard loss because they spent so much time in the backfield before the plays. Developing, I think we got to work our way out of that. The receivers, question mark right now, because we don't know what routes they're asking them to throw. It seems like our receivers are the only receivers in the league who have a problem getting open. You know, and then
I tell you what, in that Giants game, there were several of them. There were several chances that Kurt has to hit some open receivers, and had some bad passes. He underthrew a lot of it.
And I think he's beginning to rely on Jordan Reed a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. I think that Reed is his go-to guy. Reed is, and like I said, his excellency said, you know, Reed stayed healthy for 2 straight games. 3 games, we got to start thinking miracle
When he's healthy, he's one of the better tight ends in the league.
But I think that what might be happening is Kurt is coming off his primary receivers a little bit too quickly to go to Jordan Reed. I think he's missing some things. Okay, so that's going around the offense. Now, the defense, same thing. I agree with you, improvement on the D-line. Didn't see a lot, but I don't know what scheme they're in, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because the Giants would have had some impressive runs. They would stop some. They had some impressive runs. The play calling on the Giants' part, brilliant. 3 drops, didn't give time for the pass rush to develop. Linebackers, they're good, but they're not striking any fear. I mean, they might pass coverage. They're on the guy when he catches the pass. I harken back to the pre-Harbaugh days at San Francisco, when Patrick Willis was really a beast, right? Mm-hmm. The rest of the defense was bad. So when it came time when the defense developed, you already had a beast there.
Right.
And then a good defense developed around them. We don't have that yet. We don't have a guy, you know, God That's bless right. London Fred last year. We don't have a guy there, That's a rock, right. mm-hmm. that we can build this thing around yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling, like I said, I got to resign myself to the fact that this is a rebuilding, and I'm looking at being not only a fan, but a talent scout, looking to see which one of these guys I think is going to be the guy that takes us into the future.
Right. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com is the website. The next opponent for the Redskins, the Philadelphia Eagles, come to town. We'll try to take a look at and preview that game coming up next. Stay close.
Accessing Federal News Radio from your iPhone has never been easier. Go to federalnewsradio.com on your phone and click the plus button to add a Federal News Radio shortcut directly to your home screen.
I don't know about putting the game behind us just yet. You know, I think it ain't good to have this feeling, but I think it'll help guys to know, you know, to feel the disappointment of losing on a primetime game, you know, a division opponent on the road. We plan to come in and take the air out the place, and we weren't able to do that. So, putting the game behind us, we'll leave that for tomorrow. Right now, we got to, learn from our mistakes.
Amazingly, if Matt holds on to that ball for a touchdown, you guys are still in the game. That's a bit of a shocker.
Yeah, and I think that probably would depict the way our evening went.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. That was Trent Williams. Big money, Trent, by the way. Big money, Trent just signed that big contract before the season started. Yeah, man, talking about, the feeling of disappointment. I think the last thing this team needs, it's not as if they forgot how losing feels. Yeah, that's the problem I have with those kids. There's two parts of that conversation that I kind of have an issue with. It's not like, it's one thing. This team wasn't 16-0 last year and then won the first two games. This year, I think they know how it feels to lose and that disappointment. But I get what Trent is saying, that you want to try to use everything to somehow benefit you, even the bad things, even losing. And but I don't know if his sentiments are necessarily correct as far as we needed this to somehow humble us or something like that. I'm not sure if that's valid.
I just had a bad feeling, man. Just go through my, just chilling through my body, because I'm thinking that these guys are being presented a game plan week after week after week, and they're being persuaded by the 26 coaches they have on the staff. That's one for every two guys. That if
a 2-to-1 ratio, right, like this middle right. school. Or
if
something.
You participate, if you execute this game plan, we will lead you to victory, right? Just trust us and believe in the game plan. And what I saw this past week, I saw a game plan against the Giants that just did not work. It was not suited. Right. The Giants recognized what they were trying to do. The Giants' offensive game plan was like it was tailor-made for what they were doing.
Well, and it's funny because when you talk about that, knowing what they want to do, I forget which cornerback it was that had that first interception. I mean, when he was interviewed post-game, he said, "We had film on it. When we saw that lineup, we knew what they were going to do. I knew they were coming my way, and I was able to jump on it because I knew that's exactly what they were going to do. They studied the film, they game plan, and like you said, you could see the execution. You could come out and see that the plan was, like you said, not to have Eli have the ball in his hands for long, dink and dunks, move the ball down the field that way, because everyone would assume, I mean, with Odell Beckham Jr., Reuben Randall, what they were going to do would be stretch the ball down the field, go deep. They did not do that for the most part until late in the second half, where they went deep to Randall, they went deep to Beckham.
And it's amazing that, like, once these 26 coaches saw that this was happening, that at least
no one made
maybe 14 of them would have talked to, like, to at least three of them and say, hey, maybe we ought to change this thing up.
Right,
but
right.
But see, when you got that many coaches, you might have coach number 17 through 20 talking amongst themselves,
right.
But really the ones who need to be talking to the coaches right. like 11 through 14, right? So maybe if we can get coach, they might not even know each other, right. man. They'll be in the same room with so many of them, they'd have to wear name tags. Hi, my name is coach number 23.
Here's
right?
what I do here.
Yeah. The other thing about what Trent said, actually it was our good friend Larry Mike who asked the question about the fact that there was the fumble by Matt Jones on the end zone. He said, man, if he holds on to that ball, you guys are still in the game. I love Larry, but I don't think
he's a little off there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Thanks for the support, Larry. Yeah, but I think that the game was pretty much in the books at that point.
Yeah,
it would
have
been just one of those garbage touchdowns. Which,
the Giants are playing ball control at that point. They're just looking at the clock. They're just trying to stay healthy, waiting for their next opponent, right? So, all in all, a lackluster effort all the way around. Offense, defense, special teams, and coaching.
But I think, again, I think if the game against the Dolphins go a different way, we feel a little differently about even this game because you're looking at a record of 2-1. But I think sometimes there are games like this that are just kind of games where you can measure the progress of the team. I mean, here's the thing: if you have a close game against Miami, okay, we may be working with something. You get St. Louis, who just beat Seattle. They come to DC and you beat them pretty sound. It's like, well, we may have turned the corner here. What you have wanted to see, or what you would have wanted to see, would be the Redskins to go to New York, a team that has tons of questions about who they are because of the way that they lost their first two games, and just go in there, get that crowd out of the game early, get the team deflated, go to New York, get a win, and come back. Then you're like, hey, this team did turn a corner. Not saying that they're going to the Super Bowl or even going to win the East, but they're serious now, because that's one of the things that good teams do. You know, there's just some things that good teams do.
Right.
And one of the things that good teams do, they go on the road and they win on the road. And so this would be one of those markers that, okay, you know what? This team could be pretty good. We could be looking at an 8-8 season, 9-7 season. And with Dallas being hurt, with Philadelphia trying to figure out what they're doing, and the Giants seemingly couldn't find a way to win a close game, you could figure 9-7 might put you in the mix for the East. And so you're
before,
like, yo, if this happens, it's like, wait a minute, we might be able, we might be looking at something pretty special here. And then what happens? They go out there and we see last year's team. And so it's like, well, maybe we should pump the brakes on whether or not we've turned a corner yet or not.
Hey, before we give up, now, it can happen before. And if you look around the NFC East, there's been some interesting developments.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So let's not give up yet, but let's let these 26 guys out there know that they're going to have to do their job too. They're going to have to look at these opponents, study these opponents, go with our strengths, avoid our weaknesses, attack their weaknesses, and avoid their strengths.
Well, see, and this is the thing about the frustrations with the running game, is that I don't think, especially early in the games, that there's a lead too big for a team to abandon the run.
Right.
You know, I don't think if you're down 9-0, as fast as the Redskins were down 9-0 to the Giants in the first quarter, that's time to abandon the run. I don't think being down, whatever it may be, 16-3, I don't think that's early enough to start abandoning the run. And the Redskins, I felt, gave up on it. Sometimes you can tell, look, if we're sitting here behind microphones and we're sitting there on the couch watching television and we can see some of these things, the professionals who get paid millions of dollars to do this can see the same thing. You can tell when the team is just kind of running just to kind of keep you honest.
Right.
And you can tell when the team is just throwing a deep ball just to keep the defense honest. They're smarter than that. We can tell when you're abandoning the run. They can tell when you're abandoning the run and you're just doing it just to kind of keep it honest. And so it changed the whole way the opponents plan their defense. And so I think that you have to have a serious commitment to the run, not one to just try to, make the other team think that you're still going to commit to the run, because ultimately you're going to still pass the ball. And so I think that it is clear that what this team does well and what this offensive line does well, they run block well. It's obvious that the team's strength is the running backs. It's obvious that if you can get a running game going, do some play action pass, that Kurt could get the ball somewhere near a receiver, even if it's underthrown. He can get it to him somewhere near a receiver, and that's the game plan. Yeah, and that's the game plan to go with,
Yeah, there was one point early in the game. Bergen and Goh had the ball, 3rd and 1. They tried some, I don't know what type of run. It wasn't just a power run, and the Giants stopped it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at that point on, 3rd and 1 was a shotgun situation for these guys. I think you got to give Giants credit for that one, but come right back at them again. I think you go to the sideline and you tell those guys who are making millions of dollars, and say, look, you're making millions of dollars. You got to give me a yard.
One yard
is all I'm asking for you all. One yard.
And that goes to what the team, when we talked about this on the last show, is missing when DeSean Jackson's not there. We understand the deep threat, and that's going to stretch the field. So we understand the technical, the X's and O's of not having him there. But he's that guy who has that fiery passion. We talk about it with Dallas, with Dez Bryant. You need that guy who is going to scream for that yard. Like, we have to get this yard. He's the guy that if we don't get this yard, he's going to be in your face on the sidelines yelling and screaming at you because you didn't get us this one yard. That's what's needed on the team. You would assume that you wouldn't have to motivate, millionaires to get a yard. But sometimes, like I said, you're on that field. You need that guy that's going to get the team, emotionally ready for what it's going to take to get the job done.
Let me tell you a story. John Riggins told me one time. It was in a, I think it was a game against against Dallas before they went to the Super Bowl. It was like they had a 3rd-and-1. They were trying to run out of the clock. And they called, Riggo, gut left, whatever the name of the play was. And Riggo said, he looked at Russ Grimm and told him, okay, Grimey, he was calling Grimey. Mm-hmm. I'm coming right up your back. I'm letting you know now. And so Grimm said, the ball was snapped. Grimm said, all he remembered, he saw stars. He saw stars. And when he came back to himself, they were in the pile. And they had gained like 4 yards. And his face mask was just up against Riggins' face mask. And Riggins looked him in the eye and said, bullseye.
That's what we're talking about, man.
The attitude, like, this is like, this is not ballet.
Right. Yeah. We need that and need that 1 yard. And so we'll see, how the rest of the season plays out. But like I said, I mean, I feel as if there are, when you look at the whole, I think that there's so much work to be done on the team. You can't look at the whole picture. And this may seem like, I'm talking about moral victories, but I'm not talking about moral victories. I mean, look, 1-2, all right, whatever. But the offensive line is playing better. There seems to be at least the attempt to commit to the running game. And the defense has played better. And I can take those as victories. And plus, we talked about the rest of the NFC East. Let's take a look at some of the other teams. Some interesting developments, obviously.
It's up for grabs, baby.
Right. Now, up for grabs for who is the question? Because... So you look at the Giants, and we spent a great deal of the show talking about them, but they're 2 close losses in the first 2 weeks of the season, and they should have won both of those games. You could be looking at a 3-0 team in them, so they might be a factor in the end of the season. But then you look at the Eagles, and everyone's trying to figure out what's good. So you have Chip Kelly, who, just after 2 seasons coaching the NFL, everybody's calling him a genius. And then he's making all these crazy offseason moves, getting rid of Shady McCoy. He's going after DeMarco Murray, bringing Matthews in. Sam Bradford now all of a sudden seems to be his quarterback of choice. For what reason? I don't know. The kid doesn't seem to be able to stay healthy, for a full season. And they seem to after, basically not being able to do anything in the first half against Atlanta, they still fall short in the second half, but they were able to move the ball, and it looked like this was the Eagles team that we saw last year and in the preseason. And then they come out against Dallas and can't move the ball. And there's all kind of questions in Philadelphia. And DeMarco Murray hurt his hamstring in practice. He's still going to play, at least scheduled to play, against the Jets. At the time that we were recording the show, the rest of the league hadn't played their Week 3 games yet. And so we don't know what the outcome against the Jets and the Philadelphia game is going to be. But what's going on in Philadelphia?
That was a really weird display. The whole thing of the interaction between Bradford and DeMarco Murray. I mean, DeMarco, you always want to do good against your old team. You always do. And it seems that the team let him down.
What was so weird about it is that DeMarco Murray, throughout his whole career in Dallas, never really showed any kind of emotion.
Right.
Definitely not anything like what he showed on Sunday. This dude was upset and let everybody know. He was staring Bradford down, and then he's yelling at the sideline and just clearly disappointed in what has been going on the first 2 weeks of the season.
It's like they didn't know that this game was important to him, and they just let him down. It's like, but see, Chip Kelly, I had a theory about this because I don't know Chip, but my thing was he has to be the top dog. He's never been in a situation where he had to keep a player more than 3 years, right? The fact that I knew for a fact that Shady McCoy was beloved in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah.
Beloved. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could not do any wrong in Philadelphia. And the fact that this man decides, we got to get rid of this. This means nothing to me.
Right.
This is competition. I got to be a top dog.
Right, and the thing is, and what validates that so much, sorry to interrupt you, but is the fact that there was really seemingly no plausible reason to even let him go. Like, why are you cutting him? Like, what's the problem?
Yeah, there is no problem. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I'll interrupt you and tell you what you want to, man. It just didn't make any sense. And to bring in Bradford, Foles, I don't see.
That's what was so weird. And speaking of Nick Foles, didn't he seem lost with St. Louis in week 2?
I think I made this observation. He got stuck early.
Yeah.
He got stuck early and he was gunshot.
He looked like a deer in headlights.
I think he was looking from that first hit, he was looking
like
for the rush.
He didn't even know what to do with the ball that time.
Yeah, and that's what made me sort of think that, hey, we got a little something going here, but we didn't follow up on it the next week. but back to Philly, they...
Foles played great for Chip the first couple of years, right? Wait a minute, what are you doing?
And then would have gone further, except he got injured late in the season, and they had to rely on Sanchez.
Right.
But there's something happening there. If Chip doesn't get control of that soon, they're lost.
You're looking at some of these positions, and even even some of the schemes. And so I'm looking at just the way that they're running Murray. And it's similar to what you had said about Alfred Morris and the Redskins running game, is that, you know, Murray is a downhill back, you know, and he's better between the tackles, and they're doing so much stuff with him running vertical that it's hard for him to even get started.
Right.
And so, like, the scheme doesn't seem to fit Murray. And then I even question why they even bring him in. It's just a lot of weird things happening in Philadelphia, and it's not coming together. They've got a couple of big injuries, especially on defense. The defense already was a weak, well, at least we thought that was going to be the weakest part of the team. It seems like the offense can't get things together. And so it's a team that that some people thought would be the best in the East right now looks to be the worst in the East.
Well, unfortunately, I think they have a cure-all coming up in the next week. Unfortunately, right. This team is always seen to be good for what ails you, right? We don't want it to be that way.
Well, let's take a look at it. So given what we see now, and again, we recorded this show before the rest of the league were able to play their third games, and so we don't know whether the Eagles beat the Jets or not. But given what we know and what we've seen now, how does the Eagles' offense match up against the Redskins' defense?
I think it matches up pretty well if you call the right plays. I think that our linebackers are good after – they're good in coverage – but they're good after the guy catches the ball, right?
They'll make the tackle.
He'll be right on them. But they have to take that next step. They got to start anticipating more, taking more chances. Like Kurt said, there's certain plays you're not going to make in this league unless you take that chance, unless you hit that hole first. I think that's one thing they miss by not having a guy like London Fletcher there to teach these other guys. London Fletcher was good at anticipating where the play was going. Don't wait until you see the guy in the hole. Be in the hole first. And that's what Robinson and Compton and Perry Rowley have to learn. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit concerned with Ryan Kerrigan. He has not been
up to snuff.
I don't know if it's injury or whatever. And always Selleck and other tight ends in Philly always hurt us. Riley Cooper is a big receiver, and our cornerbacks, you know, D'Angelo Hall suffering a very, very sad injury because he worked so hard to get back from Achilles injuries and stuff. And his body is of that, you know, it's at a time where it just doesn't
heal. Things are going to break down, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't heal like he used to, right? And it's a shame that there's that much pressure on him to have to perform because we lost without him, right? You know, I like the addition of Culliver. I really like that. I think Breland is coming into his own, but they're gonna have to learn the hard way, and that might be the best thing for them. They might have to learn. Hey, look, I'm out here on the island. It's me against the world.
Right.
Like, I'm not gonna look bad no more. Right.
You know? Well, I mean, I think the first thing that's going to be key, and you know, this is fundamental. I mean, everybody knows this. They're going to have to stop the run.
Right.
They're going to have to make sure that Eagles team that we saw in the second half of the Atlanta game is not the team that shows up against the Skins. Because if they can get running the ball, that's really what that whole offense is predicated on. If they can get running the ball and they can get 4 to 5 yards a pop, it opens up the fast-paced passing. And then once those big guys up front gets winded, you know, it's going to be hard to get pressure on the quarterback. And I think that if they can stop the run first, and I think that's what Dallas did so good against that offense, which made it hard for the Eagles to score, was that the Cowboys did a really good job stopping the run. Mm-hmm. I think DeMarco Murray ended up with 11 yards or something like that. And so that's going to be top priority, is making sure you stop the run. Because I understand about Riley Cooper and Selleck, but I don't think, outside of Selleck, but I don't think that the Eagles passing game, you know, gives you, you know, keeps you up at night. You know what I mean? I don't think it's going to keep, you know, a D coordinator up at night trying to figure out how in the world we're going to stop these guys.
I think we have to show some innovation. We can't let the offense come and look at our defense at the line of scrimmage and say, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right. You know? Yeah.
We need to get back to that.
Throw some seasoning on it like you were talking about earlier.
Stop
being so vanilla.
That's exactly what they're going to have to do. That's it.
And so then we'll flip it to the offense. I think that the Redskins offense matches up really well against Philadelphia's defense, especially with the injuries to their star linebacker. I think they'll be able to run the ball, and I think they've got to run, and then you can open up some things off play action. I'm really looking to see Deshaun may play. We're not sure. But I'm really looking to see, you know, when are we going to stretch the field a little bit, get Pierre Garçon more involved, you know. But I believe that all that's going to be determined if they can just establish the run first to keep those linebackers and safeties frozen for a little bit just to get these guys open.
I'm looking for Philly to put eight in the box initially. I'm looking if a good offensive coordinator would anticipate that. I'm looking for some three-step drops. I'm looking for some slants. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for Philly to try to confuse him with multiple looks. And I'm looking for some of the rookies to come in because we got some rookies with some speed who apparently
That's another bright side. I mean, you look at Crowder, who had a pretty good game. Ross had a great game. And so, you know, there are some young guys there. And like you said, I mean, look, there's plenty of opportunities to step up on this team. You know what I mean? There's plenty of space for improvement. And say maybe that's where some of these young guys can come in and kind of say, hey, I'm here. You mm-hmm. know?
No, I was going to say that we've been remiss in mentioning the tragedy in Dallas and the.
Let's go to the Cowboys. Let's go down to Texas. Talk about the Dallas Cowboys, yeah. Who seem to just be losing player after player after player. One of the things I think that's kind of hidden in the fact that Dez hasn't been playing and Romo hasn't been playing. That Witten also had two high ankle sprains in the Eagles game. Nothing bad or serious. He's at least scheduled to play against at Atlanta. And so now you've got a situation where their top receiver is Terrence Williams, their quarterback, at least for the next 8 weeks, with a bye week in week six, so I guess the next 7 weeks, is Brandon Weeden. And the running game hasn't been what it was the first 2 weeks of last year. And so you're like, what's going on down there? And despite all that, they're 2-0. And so, you know, what are your thoughts about the things happening down in Dallas?
You got to look at the fact that Brandon Weeden is exactly what your number two quarterback is supposed to be, right? Mm-hmm. He has experience as a starter. Mm-hmm. He's mature because I think when he was drafted, he was like 28.
He was 36 when he graduated.
Yeah, getting Social Security. Right. So he's mature. Mm-hmm. He's got that maturity where you need to take control of the huddle. If nothing else, age will step in and say, right. All right, little boy, shut up. I got this, right? You know, so he's got that. And Sean Lee has been playing like a madman, you know.
Right.
They went far without Sean Lee. I was very surprised at that last year.
Yeah, but the defense played pretty well last year without Sean. And he's another one of those guys where, you know, you just wonder how long is he going to stay healthy? Because the last 2 years, you know, and I think it was 2 years ago, that serious kind of neck situation. But, I think that when you look at that team, it's almost the same recipe that you're talking about with the Redskins. Now that Weeden is out, is in as a starting quarterback, is that, you know, you're going to have to run the game. You've got that great offensive You've got that great offensive line. Run the ball. Don't make Weeden have to win the game, right? And then rely on the defense also to make some plays. And I think that they're built actually to do that. I don't think folks should sleep or count the Cowboys out because of the Romo thing, because he's not gone all year. And they have a team around Weeden that could possibly, you know, ground and pound and rely on defense to win.
Yeah, unfortunately for him, it's not the best time to become a starter when your number one offensive weapon is out. So we'll learn a lot about this guy. We'll see what he's been made of. We'll see what he's learned over the years in this league, and we'll see if RG3 will be traded and be wearing the star.
You know, it's so funny because as soon as Romo went down, you look on Twitter and on Facebook, everybody said RG3 is going to Dallas because you know Jerry Jones loves him, and you know, and all these rumors about RG3 going to Dallas. Let me tell you something. Daniel Snyder's not letting RG3 go anywhere. He wants him to be his starter next year when he fires Jay Gruden and gets rid of Kirk Cousins.
As I mentioned earlier, he looked at the books and said, made an awful lot of money selling those number 10 jerseys. How many Cousins jerseys have I sold?
That's it.
And no Gruden jerseys.
So we looked at the matchup with the Eagles, but what is your prediction for the game against the Eagles a week from now?
It's going to be hard to say because I know if I had some input, I would say it would be 17-13 burgundy and gold because mm-hmm. we take the air out the ball, limit the amount of times that the high-powered offense has a chance to get on track and take advantage of the frustration they feel in Philly right now because you know they're going to come out with everything they got trying to show mm-hmm. that they're not who they were in their last performance. Right. And we got to take advantage of that if I was one of the 26 guys. So I'm saying 17-13.
If you were one of the 26 guys. I think it's going to be one of those games. I think it's going to be a 16-10 game. And I think you're going to see the same Eagles team you saw against Dallas. I think they're going to struggle to find any kind of offensive traction. I think the Redskins are going to really feed. I think the defense is going to feed off the home crowd. And I don't think you're going to see any kind of, you know, impressive performance from Kirk Cousins. I think that the defense is going to, and the defense in the crowd is going to carry the Redskins to the win. I'm thinking 16-10 Washington.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting, right? So anyway, look, you can follow us on Twitter at FFRep. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We'll see what happens with this team. Like I said, 1-2, but I feel better about the team than I would about a regular 1-2 team.
And a special thanks to Pope Francis for taking the time to answer our questions. Yeah.
Thank you, Holy Father. You're listening to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio.